This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Mike Johnson in here. Jamie Noodles McLennan on his way to Philly.
My second guess is the gun element. It's like, what?
I'll buy you a new computer.
Well, but then, again, in the
Nobody
moment...
bought me one.
I hope to not be in a position like this, but you see what happened in London last week with the terrorist attack, and those were just Samaritans chasing this guy down.
The story, the summary of the guy, what those people did?
Yeah, like the whale husk or something.
Off the wall, and like we're trying to... Amazing.
Unbelievable. And Melnick alone. That was probably a part of the precondition. Like,
that's
I'll
a
do
no-move
it.
Clause implemented immediately.
Has to be, because I know I'm going to get grilled... for this.
And maybe like a 5-year goodwill extension even when you're done retired.
Mm-hmm. I need it. I need that type of hookup for this type of bad press that's going to come my way.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's pretty cool.
There you go.
So speaking of Vancouver, Ray Ferraro will join us in a few minutes. Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. See your boy Freddie Kitchens, who was spotted in a Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt on Friday. In Cleveland before they flew to Pittsburgh and got beat by the Steelers. Of course they got beat by the Steelers.
I get it. Yeah, I think he claimed his daughter bought him the shirt. But it's just stupid stuff that stupid people are doing. I mean, in the situation that you're in, with the record you have and some of the scrutiny you've been under, who are you to be doing that type of garbage? Well, like, I get it if you want to be in your face and we're not afraid of Pittsburgh, but you're just... you're just in no position to be doing that. So why set yourself up for failure? Because you've already been a failure this year.
I can't really explain it. Like, I don't know, especially considering what happened. Like, you lost Myles Garrett, your best player for the year. Okay, maybe Pittsburgh did start it. Maybe Mason Rudolph got in there and was trying to poke at his eyes or kick him in the junk or whatever. But you lost your guy, your best player for the rest of the year, maybe into next year.
Mm-hmm.
So take some of that responsibility, and it pretty much defines the Cleveland Browns. Like, they're all talk, they're all about the catchphrases, they're all about having fun or having a chip on their shoulder, and they never follow through.
It's the most overrated unit I've ever, ever seen. Like, I just look at Baker Mayfield's pressers, I'm like, why is this guy getting so much airtime? Why?
It's not going to continue for long, because if they're done now, like, clearly. They're
How long has Beckham Jr. signed there for?
He's under control for a couple of years.
Because those guys, they don't stay silent for long.
He is not going to be happy in Cleveland.
Unless they turn around and he gets the ball.
Right. Because they're staring at like a 7-9 season. They're not going to make the playoffs again. Baker Mayfield has not proven at any point this season that he is what we thought he could be, myself included. Freddie Kitchens is going to get fired. So maybe that's why he's wearing the shirt, because he's like, I'm just living the dream now as a head coach in the NFL.
I got 6 weeks, whatever.
I'll never be given this opportunity ever again. My daughter wants me to wear a shirt. I'm bombing around Cleveland. Maybe people in Cleveland appreciate it.
He's got to get an assistant job. Every head coach gets an assistant job somewhere.
Usually, yes.
Somewhere.
Usually, yes. But this,
always.
Not to be a coordinator. You can be like an offensive line coach or whatever.
He'll get a job somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. At some point, he'll have a job like wide receiver coach
whatever.
Or something. He will get back in a building somewhere. And he probably is deserving of that. Being a head coach is a lot different than focusing on your department. And clearly, he is not capable of doing it. But it's just one more example. Like, Pittsburgh is on their third string quarterback. They had big players get suspended. And... of course Pittsburgh wins, and the Steelers are in the race. The Steelers might make the playoffs. And I got to think, there's a lot of push for it, like Coach of the Year in the NFL. Mike Tomlin's got to be on a short list.
The last couple years, there's been a bunch of times where I'm like, how does Mike Tomlin get away? Like, how is he still around there? And this year, I'm like, brilliant coaching, man.
All he does is win.
Yeah.
He does. Like, you expect more, because every year you think when Roethlisberger was there and when Brown was there and Le'Veon Bell, you're like, they have too much talent not to win 12 games and go to a Super Bowl or compete for it, and they'd fall short of that, but they still got to, like, 10 wins.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have any 5-11 seasons. Like, that just doesn't happen with Mike Tomlin. So you got to give credit where it's due. And Roethlisberger gone, Bell gone, Brown gone, and they're better than they were a year ago. They're 7-5, and they're in
contention. He's a regular season coach. You know, a guy who Although they won Super Bowls there, too.
He's a lot more.
He's got a good resume.
His resume is intact. I mean, Mike Tomlin, he's feeling pretty secure.
Like Ferraro's resume. Stuffed.
The equivalent of Ray Ferraro's resume. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here is Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
I'd like to have the longevity of those Pittsburgh coaches. They've had three in like 40 years.
It's incredible, isn't it? Like, it is. Like, Bill Cowher was there for a long, long time. And I don't think they fired him. I'd have to look that up. I feel like he just said, I'm out. I think he retired.
But they didn't. I don't think they fired Chuck Knoll either.
Right. They hate firing people in Pittsburgh.
So it's like you become the coach there, and you're like literally, I think it's three coaches in 35 years.
It is.
Something.
Yeah. It is. With a lot of Super Bowls. And success. Yeah. It's not like they've been terrible, and you can't figure out why they won't decide to go in a different direction. They obviously have a pretty good vetting process, and they picked the right guy. Because Cowher was great, and Tomlin's been great. And that is a luxury that very few teams in pro sports have, where they just commit to a guy, and they know it's going to work.
You know, look at the bad teams in any sport. They've had eight coaches in 12 years. And then you're like, oh, and these guys have had 3 and 35.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you compare it to Cleveland, Ray. I mean, the Browns have had how many guys in the last decade?
A zillion.
I can't even think to name them all. And
they'll have a new one
and
next
another
September.
New one upcoming. And you wonder why they're always in transition and turmoil. They don't have that stability. But they got to hire the right guy.
That's the thing. I got to believe a lot of that is they just didn't hire the right guy.
Yeah.
Like sometimes we've been talking about it here in Toronto. Where with Keefe, they are pulling a 180. They're taking a chance on a guy who's never coached in the NHL. Prior to him, it was Babcock, Carlisle, Wilson, Maurice. Like all four of them are like top 20 all time in wins mm-hmm. and have been around forever. It's not like they were bad coaches, but it couldn't work here. Like they didn't. I don't think they made the wrong choice. They just. For whatever reason, in Toronto, they couldn't make it work.
But don't you think going forward, the grizzled old guys, and not because of the stuff that's going on in the game, it's just players aren't listening to that. Like it's already been talked about in Montreal. Claude Julien, great guy and everything, great coach, but these guys just aren't listening.
Do you see that, Ray? Do you see that as a legitimate issue in the league?
Well, yes, in that if you're a veteran guy, you better figure out how to connect with your players. Because it's like having the smartest teacher in your grade 9 math class, and you can't figure out what he's talking about, doesn't mean that he's a good teacher. It means he's really smart, and nobody understands what the hell he's talking about. If you're an older coach, or you're a hard-ass coach, you better figure out a different way to deliver your message. And it might be through younger assistants to keep yourself relevant, to keep yourself up to date with what these guys think about and do. Like, I was told with one of the things that was really shocking when Willie Desjardins was coaching the Canucks was that he didn't have a connection, a way to connect to the first-year players. Like, at that time, I think it was Jared McCann and Jake Virtanen. And I'm not talking about this stuff going on now. I meant just like a personal connection. He didn't understand why are they all their phones all the time, right? Like, you've got to be connected and relevant to what the players are talking about and thinking about. Otherwise, we're just going to tune the coach out. And, yeah, I see it as an issue for sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating transition we're going through right now. Now, there are some extreme examples, obviously. Bill Peters, that's not about not connecting, as we know. No. But Mike Babcock is dealing with, you know, his reputation continues to be trampled on. And more stories are coming out. Chris Chelios was on Spit and Chicklets podcast today, I believe, and told the story about Johan Franzen and the way Babcock was treating him. And Franzen came out in Europe and said, yeah, it's true. And honestly, 2 weeks ago when he was let go, week and a half ago, I thought if he wanted another job the next day, he could have gotten it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to happen now. I really don't, Ray. I don't know if Babcock's going to get back in.
Well, especially with some of those quotes from Franzen. It's not like, yeah, it was kind of an uncomfortable situation. He said he's the worst human I've ever been around. Like, when you hear stuff like that, who wants to bring that into their environment?
Well, I would say if they are going to, like, if he wants to coach again, and if somebody wants to hire him, there's the time frame changes quite considerably. And I would think one of the, and I'm curious what you guys think. So I would think one of the things that will immediately change, I don't know exactly how, but the way that teams interview their coaches mm-hmm. and what they ask and what they look for and what they're trying to establish will completely change. And so if you think Mike Babcock's a good coach, you would have to discuss with him, okay, you've got these complaints and issues with ex-players that they keep making public. How do I know that's not going to be the case again? Have you learned? Have you taken courses? Have you tried to understand? Have you learned sensitivity training? I don't even know what it is, but I think teams are going to demand that from their coaches going forward.
And do you think teams, Ray, because, you know, times change, standards and what's acceptable has changed, and if a coach, whether it's Mike Babcock or someone else, says, yeah, you know, I treated people differently back then, I wouldn't do that now, it's not right now, it was more the norm then, you think a lot of teams would be like, okay, I can appreciate that you've changed the way you behaved before, you acknowledged it, and we're okay with that as long as you don't do it again?
No, I think there's going to have to be more, Mike. Like, I think there's going to have to be, okay, would you be willing to go through this training? Would you be willing to do,
right.
You know, like at the draft, they give these kids those psychological tests. I don't know, you know, what are you more scared of, a 1,000 penguins or one gorilla or whatever the questions are? They're going to try and figure out what the hell it all means. I think there will be deeper testing, deeper search to make sure that you take away some of the variables. Like, you can't just take a guy's word, but you have to see, has this pattern of behavior changed? And I don't know how it's going to be done, but I've got this feel that the hiring process is going to become far different than it's been in the past. And I've never been in a coach's hiring meeting. I just think it's going to be way different than it's been.
Well, that brings into play a party that has not been brought up primarily throughout this conversation, and that's the GM. Because there's got to be an evolution here from the GM for that to happen. Now, they may think, I have to do this because of PR. I have to do this because the players are going to respond to this.
Or maybe they just have to get away from the idea, I need to get my guy and just make a panic move because the coach is not his guy.
But it's not even about that. It's a type of guy. We know this throughout the history of sports, and this is not exclusive to hockey. There have been GMs who have turned on their players and said, I need to go get a guy that's going to kick them in the ass. I got to go get a guy who they're going to hate. Like, they know when you hire these guys. Well, the players are going to hate this guy
You
hire him.
St. Louis, now, they didn't hate Craig Berube, but one of the reasons he got in the job last year because they wanted a guy who was going to be harder. Whatever that means, harder. They went for a guy who was the opposite, trying to find someone that would challenge his players more. And it obviously worked out very well. I'm sure they all got along brilliantly. But the idea where you're trying to find a different personality to squeeze guys or to make them uncomfortable or take away their comfort zone or whatever it is.
Is that going to change?
That might change.
Well, it might change, but will, don't you think, Mike, like what will change, you know, is that the way you are hard on your players.
Right, the way you define being hard, yes.
Yeah, it will be different. Yeah. And it's not about whether some guy's on the power play or not, and he doesn't like that quote-unquote treatment. We're not talking about that. We're talking about something far more significant. Because players and coaches, since the beginning of time, have always had disagreements and always will. Because the guy that delivers your ice time may or may not think that you're a very good player. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't like you. It doesn't mean anything other than, hey, I got somebody else that does the job better than you. But, you know, what I've heard a lot is that, you know, the respect or the way of doing business has to change. And I don't think that's, not even for a second do I think that is an outrageous goal to have.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it seems reasonable.
We were all spoken to in a way that they just wouldn't talk to the players today.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was. I mean, like, I didn't even think anything of it. It was. And now it just isn't and shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. What are you expecting from Mitch Marner in this new system, Sheldon Keefe? He's had, you know, he didn't have a great summer with the contract. He didn't play that well 5-on-5 before he got injured.
He got a $65 million contract.
Right.
Summer turned out
let
okay.
Let me rephrase that. Yeah. The PR machine was not churning in his direction. Right. Let's put it that way. But now I almost feel like this injury gives him a fresh start on the whole season, and they need him. Like, you've noticed that many times.
We talked about the record they need coming down the stretch here, 33-21 to possibly get in. That's no joke.
I think he, I mean, I can't imagine he's not thrilled to get back into this system. Like, there was a goal in the game I did on Friday, guys. I think Tabara scored it. But Zach Hyman had the puck right outside the blue line, and he was going to dump it in.
Yeah. Back to Riley. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, it was Zach Hyman who you would think would go plunge it forward and go chase after it and forecheck, and he's like, oh, we're supposed to regroup. Like, how do you think that's going to play with Mitch Marner? He's going to love it. He's going to love it. Like,
yep.
I don't know. I would like to play in this system. Yep. Even though we didn't have a system, I don't even know what the heck we did. We just kind of played. Love to have this system.
You're way out of the curve, Ray. They freed you right up. You just get to play. You don't have to think about anything out there. But, yeah, for an offensive guy whose inclination is to try to make plays always anyways and to be put into a system where you're maybe somehow occasionally told not to would stifle that, yeah, you'd think it would.
It's almost made for
it
him.
It would fit perfectly for a guy with his game and his mind.
Now, the ankle injury is, you know, will probably be somewhat bothersome for him for a little bit of time. I'm sure there'll be a time where he catches his ankle and goes out and is worried that he's really hurt himself. But that'll sort itself out in a week or two. And look, the kid's a fabulous player, right? Like, what did he have last year? Over 90 points, and it's not like all of a sudden he's a 50 point guy. I think as soon as he's healthy and back up and running and, you know, and back in the groove, that we'll see Marner-like numbers from it.
What do you think about, I know it's early and it's just practice, but Sheldon Keefe keeping Mikheyev up on the line with Tavares and Marner and putting Hyman down to the third line with Kerfoot and Kapanen, breaking up before they even get going the trio of Marner, Tavares, and Hyman from last year?
Well, it's funny. I look at Hyman on a third line, and I think that's kind of where he fits.
Right.
You know, like that's where he should be. Yet he's been so successful, and really has been, as being like the worker bee on that line, on the Tavares line, Matthews line the year before. I would say they probably didn't have as many options, and Mikheyev looks like a guy can. Well, he won't be the same player as Hyman. He looks like a guy that skates well enough, will get in on a forecheck, will create some, you know, some disadvantages with his speed and length. You know, he's a long guy. I think he can be a good fit there. Doesn't mean it's forever, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that heck, he might look at that for two games and go, nope,
right.
Nice idea in my office, not a good idea today.
Well, it seems like a bunch of people are getting together and talking about situations that might look good, as opposed to before getting back to Babcock. It was his way, and that's it. And Zach Hyman's the best forechecking left winger on earth, and he's on the first line, and it's never changing, and that's what he thought. And that's the difference. It seems like people are talking and generating ideas to what could work and be different. But with him, it was like, no, that's my decision. And he had the ability to do that, and that's the way it played out.
Well, I would, you know, not to, I'm not defending anybody here, because I'm going to get back to your point right now in a seco, but, like, lots of head coaches like to have all of the decision. And I think what you're talking about, this collaboration, this approach, this fits with what the staff of and what Kyle Dubas's idea is for management. It's that there are more people involved, more people, you know, throwing an idea or a piece into the puzzle. The game I did Friday, so the Leafs are down a goal and they pull the goalie. And they've got an offensive zone faceoff, and Paul McFarland's drawing on the board. And I pointed it out in the game because it really, it struck me as so different, because all of this year, when there was pulled goalie, Babcock drew on the board.
Or like the bench, like a cool guy.
Yeah. He was coaching the whole bench. And everybody else, you know, Dave Haxtell and Paul McFarland were the assistants. Like, it was very clear. And if you look at most teams, when the assistant coach or when there's a timeout, it's one of the assistants drawing. The head coach looks like he's standing there, you know, looking around the rink. Because each guy has a part of the game that they're supposed to specialize in, each coach. And I found that to be a real notable difference the other night.
Play mind reader for us here. Mark Bergevin, the GM of the Habs. What's he thinking right now?
Oh, nothing good.
Thanks. They can't be, right?
Like, I look at them and they're kind of a train wreck right now. Mm-hmm. They've given up, what, 35 goals in 8 games? The 0-5-3. You know, they're up 1-0. They give up the Pastrnak goal. They can't kill a penalty ever.
No, they're young, they're small, and they don't have elite talent. They have some with, obviously, Weber, who's not Weber of elite talent Weber, and they have Carey Price, who's not that of Carey Price elite talent. So that's what you're going to get. That's what they are. So,
yeah, and you're paying them $20 million.
Well, that's the problem, Ray. Right? They're committed to those two guys who are in their 30s for $20 million for 3, 4, 5 more years. More than that with Carey Price, they can't rebuild. They can't strip it down and take 4 years because those two guys won't be good in 4 years.
They got Shea.
So
Weber,
what are they
going to
do?
10 more. What are you talking about?
Weber?
Oh yeah.
Weber's got 4 years,
four
I think.
Yeah. I think Carey's got 7.
Carey Price got 7, and so you're like, where are you going to go? Like, what are you going to do? They don't have an elite scorer. You know, they've got, you know, Brendan Gallagher's an excellent player.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't be your best right winger. You know, so you got Kotkaniemi, who's just a kid. Suzuki's just a kid. Like, it's hard to make that kind of impact that they need. And right now, they look like they're floundering. They, you know, they kept talking. They're scoring by committee. That's like when you have we've got 2 really good goalies or 2 really good quarterbacks. That means you don't have 1 really good quarterback. They don't have a scorer. Offense is going to be a problem for them. What's really become the biggest problem in my mind is we knew the offense was going to be like that. Defensively, they're not great. They can't kill a penalty to save their life. And their goalie has fallen off the map. And I don't know which is the most important, but they're not going to wallpaper around Carey Price.
They just call up Caden Primo.
Right.
So, there you go. We'll see.
Can you imagine that? Okay, kid, go
get in there.
At her.
Yeah. Find a way, because they need
a
win.
By the way, we had Keith Primo last year at the World Juniors, and he's a nervous wreck, as you can imagine, when his kid's playing goal, right? And he's good. Like,
really
Keith Primo was outstanding. And but I'm like, man, there are no easy nights for a goalie's dad.
No kidding. In Montreal.
And they had the Islanders tomorrow. Avalanche Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Good luck in Montreal. All right, buddy.
That could end up at 10 in a hurry, eh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then that might be it. I mean, at the end of the year, you could look back and say November cost us, early December. We'll see. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Talk to you then, boys.
Here's Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. For all of December, receive a $500 gift certificate to Vaughn Mills when you purchase or lease any new stock vehicle. Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland. Marcellus Wiley on Shirtgate in Cleveland with Freddie Kitchens. What's up with Tom Brady, your boy, and the New England Patriots?
I've got that question locked and loaded.
And who does he like tonight? A big game, Seattle, Minnesota. This is what I'm talking about. The Bills getting flexed to Sunday night.
Flexed.
Bills.
Will we hear Al's brother's alarm? You never know.
It could happen at any point this afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Marcellus Wiley coming up here in just a moment, our NFL analyst. Quick shout-out, congratulations to Dwayne Dixon from North York. Dwayne has just qualified to win a pair of tickets to see Kawhi Leonard's return to Toronto on December 11th. Visit tsn1050.ca and enter for your chance to win. A new qualifier will be announced every day until Thursday right here on Overdrive. And on Friday, we will announce the grand prize winner.
When is that game?
December 11th.
But like, is it a night? Is it a weekend?
What yeah, it's a weekday game. So that might be one we have to get down there for.
A little Christmas date, me and you.
I like it Buddy a night. Lot.
Buddy night?
I like
they
it.
They put up 150 last night. The Clips.
The Clippers?
150 in regulation.
Here's a question we were throwing around in the office before the show started. Pascal Siakam is just not going to ever get to a point where he's going to win the MVP. It's either going to be Giannis, Luka Doncic, you know, it'll be LeBron.
Won't he get sniffing around like talk or no?
Well, here's
all NBA team.
Here's what I'm wondering. Who do you think has a better chance at like top 10 MVP votes? Siakam or Leonard?
Because Leonard.
Are you asking on merit or on reputation?
Well, that all factors in.
Right,
they
so
all
that's,
connect.
That's why it's Kawhi. It's L.A., it's Kawhi. You know.
Yeah.
The team's going to be really good.
That was a dumb question.
No, how dumb is it, man? Listen, everyone thought the Clippers were going to finish like first overall and run away with it. No one thought the Raptors would be 15-4 and arguably the best team in the NBA, because that's exactly what they are. And Siakam is the man now. And he's putting up numbers that are off the charts. And he plays every night. It's an admirable trait. Kawhi's going to play 60 games.
What's the LA Clippers record?
That's pretty good.
When he's playing, they've lost one game, I think.
They're 15-6. The Raptors are 15-4. They're better.
Right, but Kawhi hasn't played three of the six losses.
So what?
Well, I think as an MVP voter, I'm looking at that.
Okay.
Yeah,
but he's also got Paul
vote.
George who's back with him.
Yeah, I think Kyle Lowry's three-time All-Star.
He's not Paul George.
No.
I'm telling you, man, that's the debate. Siakam, more MVP votes than Kawhi.
Doncic, if that team's
well,
good.
No
that
kidding.
Guy is.
Yeah, he's
ridiculous.
A pretty good player. All right, here's our former NFLer, host of FS1, Speak for Yourself, our NFL analyst, and Clippers fanboy, Marcellus Wiley. What's up, Marcellus?
Oh, I'm loving this conversation right now.
Yeah.
Look at the trail of greatness that Kawhi Leonard's left, to the point where that team is playing lights out, and Siakam, man, above expectations that were already high. But that's all attributed to the greatness of one Kawhi Leonard, who is now L.A. Clipper.
And that's why he'll get the MVP votes.
Right.
Just by osmosis, his greatness left its mark here, even though he blazed on out to L.A.
In the wake of Kawhi, look what follows the greatness that always follows Kawhi.
Yeah, that's probably right. You're probably right about that.
Marcellus, last night, the Pats game, there's a lot of talk. Is there a problem with Brady, or is there a problem with the passing game, or the guys he's passing to? There's no Gronk, there's no AB, there's no Gordon out there. How do you assess that? Is Brady the issue, or the guy he's thrown to?
It's hard to separate the two. I think both of them are an issue. Tom Brady right now, in the midst of seven straight games, not 100 quarterback rating, that's never happened in his career as Tom Brady, but it's happening right now. With the receiving core, obviously they're not winning outside the numbers. Speed is an issue, but more importantly is trust. There's a few videos floating around the internet right now showing that lack of trust. Tom Brady's trying to audible at the line of scrimmage, and Philip Dorsett is not getting the audible, wasting a play, and more importantly, eroding the trust. This is an option-based offense in terms of their passing game. They use leverage. They use audibles. They use line play to really take advantage of whatever the defense gives them. And if a guy is not going to be astute in his before-the-snap reads, or he's not going to be astute in his preparation, you're going to lose a lot of opportunities. I think that's what's happening right now. Tom Brady in decline, sort of. Tom Brady with the elbow issue and not having the adequate personnel, especially on the edges.
Yeah, it starts to become pretty clear why he was courting Antonio Brown. Like, he looked past all the stuff in Oakland pretty quickly.
I just want a guy to get open.
Yeah, I need someone. I need a game breaker. He's well aware of what he has. I'm sure he's been begging Gronkowski to come back. That has come and gone. Gronk is not going to return. It's him and Edelman out there, effectively. But I would be concerned also with... Listen, their defense is off the charts good, but Deshaun Watson carved them up. Lamar Jackson got them, and they're going to face one of those two guys or Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're going to need a dynamic type of a game, and who knows if they have it against those guys.
I don't know if you can beat those teams 13-10. Like, is that even possible in the playoffs?
No, it's not. And it's interesting, Bill Belichick's greatness, he's 3-6. in rematch games in the playoffs. So a team that he saw earlier in the season, everyone thinks that once Belichick sees you, he figures you out. The record actually indicates other, that it doesn't work that way. So I look at this situation where if he sees Baltimore again, he sees Houston again, they have to feel extremely confident that they'll be able to put up that same performance, if not better. But the thing about it is, Belichick in the playoffs, especially to get that home game at Foxborough still, they're tough to beat. They just know how to play a simplistic style that basically asks you not to make a mistake or they'll capitalize. Now, I love that Tom Brady is passively, aggressively trying to court Antonio Brown or any receiver that can help his core, because we overthink it at times. We always get into the analytics and some of our statistics, but basically, who can win the one-on-one matchups? And Tom Brady still is good enough a quarterback to get you the ball if those receivers can win the matchups. But when Edelman's getting doubled and then you don't have a tight end like Gronkowski, everything gets more difficult.
With Marcellus Wiley, where do you stand on the Freddie Kitchens T-shirt story where he was caught walking around Cleveland in a Pittsburgh started it T-shirt, and then he rolls into Pittsburgh and the Steelers were the third tier quarterback get the win, and the Steelers are in the playoff race, Cleveland effectively done now. Is that just, you know, all good and funny and cool and people in Cleveland are going to love it, or do you take issue with that?
Oh, I take issue with it, man. Totally immature. Because of position, because of title, being a head coach, you have to be one who creates a perception that your players have to go out there and make real in reality, which is to have accountability, to be responsible, to be prepared, to have your focus, laser focused on the eye, on the prize. And that's not what's happening in Cleveland. They're distracted. They're not accountable. They're not responsible. They are underwhelming. And all that happens because of antics like this that come from those you look up to and those who set the tone and the culture. So it's pretty sad. Some people predicted this. I won't lie and say I didn't hear the rumblings of Freddie Kitchens is not your head coach. He's more your homeboy. And I tried to ignore that to give him his opportunity and his chance, but time and time again, he just shows that he's not fully mature for that position. So for someone who doesn't get an opportunity to get on the field with you and mix it up in the X's and O's, you have to make sure you create that world, that perception that everything matters and everything counts, including your T-shirt that you wear in public that you try to blame on your daughter. Like, it's just it's irresponsible of a person of leadership to actually travel this path and expect consistent results and success.
Marcellus, you ever been on a team that's going to a game, you're the better team, you have to win, you're playing a bottom feeder that's gutted their roster, I'm talking Philly, Miami here, and you just couldn't get it done? Can you explain what's going on in Philly in that NFC East? It seemed like such a layup for them to take control of the division.
I've been in this position before. I tell you, one, you have to remember, in the NFL, even if a team is not good, they still have good personnel. They're a collection of all-stars from the collegiate level. Mm-hmm. And some of them are Hall of Fame caliber, and some of them are Pro Bowlers. So never get deluded in thinking that a team overall is just bad. It just may be easier to beat this team, but it's still going to be hell to pay to beat them. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Two, whenever you start thinking, oh, we have bigger fish to fry than the game at hand, which the Eagles are thinking, wow, we can leapfrog Dallas or we can win a division, and you stop thinking for that very second about your opponent, no matter how good or bad they are, but you start thinking about greater tasks and greater goals, what's right in front of you has a better chance of getting you. And that's just what happens. It's kind of the human psychology of it. If you're running track, they tell you not to look in the don't look sideways, don't look in the lanes next to you, and don't look behind you. Look straight ahead and focus in on your next steps. Simple as that. It sounds boring. It's cliche. It's Nick Saban wrapped in a burrito with Bill Belichick, and it's boring. But let me tell you, if you don't do that, you're susceptible and vulnerable at all moments, including against the Dolphins.
Susceptible to, was it the kicker, to the placeholder option on the for the pass? I mean,
I love those
plays. I love those plays. It's great. You haven't seen that in the scouting report, have you?
Oh, no, especially you have nothing to lose, man. You just throw it all out there, man. They're in the back of the book in terms of the playbook and what they're going to throw at opponents just to see what sticks.
Yeah, you got nothing. In fact, you're trying to lose in Miami. You do have something to lose. A win. That's what you're trying to lose, is actually winning games. And, you know, we got another example of it. The Bengals, of course, beat up on the Jets. The Jets are finally feeling good about themselves, and they roll in and get blown up by Cincinnati. But it's just more proof, man. It is very difficult to go 0-16. You know, it's just so tough.
It really is, man. No matter how bad, I've been on a 4-12 team, and I've been on an 11-5 team. And I tell you that there's another force beyond how good we are, X's and O's. It's almost like an energy that comes along for the ride when you're doing well, and it abandons you when you're not. But in terms of how good the teams actually are, like the personnel and the players, man, very little difference. Hall of Famers on my 4-12 team, and just like some good guys on my 11-5 team. Amazing how there's such a thin line between winning and losing every single week in the league.
Yep. No question. And it's a big one tonight. Seattle, Minnesota should be a fun game. Enjoy that, buddy. We'll do it again this time next week.
All right, guys. Have a great one, man. Start the weight loss program. We're fat down here in America right now. Thanksgiving took its toll.
All right, man. Nothing but veggies and water tonight. Soak it up.
I'll try.
All right, buddy.
All right.
There's Marcellus Wiley, our NFL analyst. Yeah, it was a big weekend down in the States. Big, big weekend. I didn't see that many videos of, like, Black Friday
mayhem.
It's almost like it's just accepted. You know, like
it's not even noteworthy anymore?
Go look at a video from 10 years ago. It's the same thing. Like, I don't think it's stopped. I think people are still losing their minds. But
as long as no one gets hurt, it's almost comical in how ridiculous it is.
It's,
I think,
so
people
ridiculous.
Are just, like, piss on it, I'll order online.
Well, the thing is about all
that's
these,
how I am, anyways.
But they're all, there's, it's just a long week. Like, today is technically Cyber Monday.
Right.
There's no better deals today than there were 3 days ago.
Yeah, so who really cares?
It's all the same.
Like, you want to be the guy that's on the TV walking into the store first, high-fiving the...
They're not walking to the store, though. They're like barreling over the greeter to get to the biggest TV that's on sale or whatever.
I guess so.
Apparently.
Yeah, down in the States. Like, they put it out there on display. Like, you know, 50-inch 4K TVs, and there's only 10 of them at that price. Fight it out. And they fight
scratching
it out.
Claw.
Patrick Sharp will be in studio in the 6 p.m. hour. Looking forward to that. Bobby Marks of ESPN will get back into the NBA and this idea that players are really going to care about this in-season tourney because a conditional draft pick will potentially be on the line. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, longtime NHLer, Cup winner, gold medalist in 2014.
Decorated
NHL veteran Patrick Sharp will be in studio at 6 p.m. Bobby Marks of ESPN at 6:30. The Raptors, they got a big week coming up. Miami tomorrow night, Houston on Thursday, at Philly on Sunday. Coming off a massive beatdown of Utah last night.
What do you think the Utah Jazz got up to?
I think they must have been up to no good, to put it lightly. Oh. I can't imagine at least half the team rolled into their hotels at 4 or 5 in the morning. Like, they put in a shift. I would guess they rented somewhere out. Like they had. I think that's the move for a lot of these guys.
The night before a game.
Yeah, of course. But you're only in town once. Like the Western Conference teams, they roll into Toronto one time a year.
They get their shot in no matter what.
Oh, when I was when I used to play for Toronto, it was a long time ago, different time. But we'd always play Saturday night. We'd always get Sunday night off. The Raptors always usually played afternoon Sunday games. I'm a big basketball fan. I was and still am a big Jordan guy. So I used to go to a place called Fluid, for anyone from that era.
Old school Toronto knows exactly what you're talking about.
Little underground,
greasy,
dark,
name.
Kind of clubby kind of place.
Shadiest spot in the league.
Multiple times in those three or whatever half years I was in Toronto on the Saturday night, I ran into the Chicago Bulls there. And I just finished playing. So I'm like, I'm great. I'm here till the bitter end. Like, I'll stay until they leave.
Off day tomorrow.
Off day tomorrow. I don't, like... And they would outlast me every time. 4 a.m. They didn't drink a ton. You know, but they're just, like, having fun with their guys and shooting the breeze with Ron Harper and whatever. And just...
They call it taking a peek.
I just... And they would hang, and I'm like...
Term.
Their game is in... 8 hours.
Wow, they're like 12:30 tip
in 8 hours.
Yeah,
and I'm exhausted. I got to go home, but there they were. So
do they keep the lights like dim for the boys? Like, because usually you're supposed to shut down around 2:30. I don't think anyone's kicking out 23.
No, he had his little raised credenza, and they were smoking their cigars in the bar and just whatever.
The belief is when the Raptors actually beat them in that 72-win season. Still the biggest regular season win in Raptors franchise history. And there never will be one that tops it because they were a disaster. They were an expansion team, and they were one of 10 losses on the season. John Sally told me this years ago. He was in studio with me like 7 or 8 years ago. And he said when they landed, like Jordan didn't go out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sure he did in the 80s, but by the time he hit mid-90s, he was such an icon and he was so big. And he was probably north of 30, had so much money. He didn't go out a lot.
Mm.
But... Sally claims the night before that game, which was a 12:30 tip, the wheels hit at Pearson, and 23 got up and said, "We're going out tonight."
Here we go, guys.
And Sally, the way he put it was, he said, when he says he's going out,
everyone's
going out. There's no, actually, I'm thinking I'm just going to take it easy. I'm going to hit the keg and head home.
I liked when the bus would pull into a city and we were like...
Keep it running.
No. Like the guys would like secretly be telling each other, everyone put their bags in the room and then we're meeting back. Like we weren't, like no one was going to figure out that. 28 gentlemen, 6 feet tall, that are meeting in the lobby. Come on.
I like when we didn't hide it. Just kept the bussy running.
Yeah.
Splash and go, bussy instead of cabs.
Yeah, I get that's the
taking it to the spot.
I did that one a couple times.
The bus driver, there's no way he was supposed to drop you guys off.
I don't know
anywhere.
If that was part of the pack.
You float him a hundred. No, I told you about the guy in LA. He came in the bar with us and got T-boned outside of the bar. He had no business being there.
I love that story.
Harry O's just parked right out front, T-boned. Guy ran a light, and the guy is like, "Now I am screwed."
Bus was supposed to be back 3 hours ago.
Yes, that was supposed to be in the lot 4 hours ago.
You guys would have scattered like cockroaches, too. Any cab you could get your hands on.
And they're gone.
That's your problem, not my problem. All right, Patrick Sharp in studio in the final hour. Bobby Marks of ESPN on the NBA and the Raptors run. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.